Continuing with Psalm 33, the next verse that we left off at was, O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that hopeth in him. We can talk about the Christian faith to those that have not embraced it, and we can give them reasons to embrace it, but only when they actually do embrace it will they be able to fully understand what it is. If we were to try to describe the taste of honey to someone who'd never tasted it before, we could give them some idea, but they wouldn't have any real idea until they actually tasted it. They might ask, well, how is honey made? And you'd say, well, these bees make it. They spit into their hives and then there's honey, and they probably would think, oh, this is something I don't want to try. But then if they actually tasted it, they would see, wow, this is really sweet. And so if you tell them that it's sweet, that gives them some idea of what it is, but until they actually taste it, they don't know. And with the Christian faith, you have to dive in. You have to actually experience it to know what it's all about fully. And even for those that are raised in the church, who were baptized in the church, very often they are far enough removed from the actual experience of a vibrant Christian life to where they also have to come and see. They also have to taste and see. This hymn we hear during the pre-sanctified liturgy during Great Lent is one of the more beautiful hymns of that service. And the pre-sanctified liturgy, of course, is done during Great Lent, which is the time of repentance, and that's a time when those who have gone astray from the faith very often start to reignite their faith and come back to the church. And so that's a time when people very often do reconnect with the faith. But it's not something that we have to wait till Lent to do. It's something that we can do right now. But we have to make the decision. We have to dedicate ourselves entirely to Christ and not hold ourselves back. O fear the Lord, all ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. Some are afraid to give themselves wholly to God, and so they do not give themselves to fear the Lord. They do not begin to fear the Lord because they're actually afraid of the Lord in the negative sense rather than in the reverent sense. They're afraid that if they really commit themselves to God, that God will ask them to do something that they don't want to do. Maybe God will ask them to become a monk or to sell all that they have and give to the poor. Well, you never know what God might ask you to do, but one thing, if you come to know God, you come to trust God, you come to realize that whatever it is that God has for you is really the best thing for you. And when you come to that point, you have nothing to fear that anyone else might do to you or anything else that life might bring. But you have only the fear of God. But it's not a fear that's a dreadful fear, but it's a fear of reverence. A fear of respect like you would have for your own father. Psalm 36, verse 4 says, Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he will give thee the desires of thy heart. If we come to know God, we commit ourselves to him 100%, we don't hold anything back from him, God will give us the desires of our heart. But that doesn't mean that whatever our fleshly desires are prior to that is what God will have for us. God will give us a right heart, so we'll desire the right things for us. But if we have done so, if God has changed our heart, he will give us the desires of our heart, so we have nothing to fear. And the second part of that verse says, For there is no want to them that fear him. And having just read the gospel of the rich man Lazarus, some of you might be thinking, well, wait a minute now, Lazarus was in want, so does that contradict what it says here in the Psalms? Well, there's another passage also in Psalm 36 that says something very similar. It says, speaking of a righteous man, it says, when he falleth, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth his hand. I have been young, and now indeed I am old, and I have not seen the righteous man forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. A man who trusts in God is never forsaken by God. And a man whose bread it is to do the will of God, and whose soul is fed by the bread from heaven, is never oppressed by a lack of bread. One thing you have to understand when you read the Proverbs and also the Psalms, this falls into the category of what's known as the wisdom books. And they very often make statements about how if you do this, then this will happen. And there's a great number of statements about how if you serve God, God will bless you and you'll prosper. And what you have to understand is these are not immutable promises from God that are invariably true in each and every case. These are general principles. And it's true that if you live a godly life, if you live according to the commandments of the gospel, you're generally going to prosper. But that doesn't mean that if you see someone who's persecuted or someone who's suffering, that they haven't been, they're not real believers, they haven't trusted in God. We don't know why God might allow something like this to happen to a particular individual. And it's not for us to know, not in this life. And even the person who's going through it very often has no idea. And it's something that they may even struggle with. If we read the book of Job, here was a man who lived a righteous life, who did everything that he was supposed to do, and indeed, he prospered. He was one of the wealthiest men in that part of the world, and everyone recognized him as such. But then, God removed his blessing and his protection for a time, and he endured one serious loss after another. So much so that his wife, at a certain point, encouraged him to just curse God and die. Let God kill you after you curse him and put an end to it all. And he said, "You speak as one of the foolish women speak. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." That's the faith of a true believer. And in Job's case, this was a trial for a short time, and God restored everything that he had lost and then some. But nevertheless, in the history of the church, you see very many people who that didn't happen to either. I mean, in this life, they ended suffering. But that doesn't mean that God was not with them. God had something even better for them. If you look at the martyrs in the early church, they were often deprived of their homes, of their money, and then they were very often tortured and put to cruel deaths. But they gained a martyr's crown. And so in the eyes of the world, this would be a horrible end. But if you look at the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, you see that that's not where it ends. That's not the whole story. The next verse of the Psalm 33 says, "Rich men have turned poor and gone hungry, but they that seek the Lord shall not be deprived of any good thing." Rich men don't always turn poor and go hungry, and that's not what it says. It says rich men have turned poor and gone hungry. And the point of that verse is to say that if you trust in riches, if you trust in wealth, you're trusting on a very thin reed because that could all be gone tomorrow. There are people who had all kinds of wealth and they had it all invested in the wrong firm, and a couple years ago they lost everything they had because it turned out that that firm was ripping them off, and they went from thinking that they were some of the richest people in the country to having nothing. And so if you're trusting in the fact that you're doing well, you're trusting in something that could be gone tomorrow, and then what are you going to have faith in? But someone who has their faith in God, there's nothing that this world could bring to them or take away from them that can take away their foundation, the foundation of their life, because their life is built on Christ. If you look at Christ himself, Christ suffered, he was tormented, he died a horrible death, but was he ever shamed? Was he ever brought to shame? No. Because he maintained who he was, and all that was just a passing thing for him, which he did because of his love for us. And the same thing with the martyrs. The martyrs suffered. They were ridiculed. They were spat upon. But they were not brought to shame. Instead, they triumphed. And that's the reason why when we look at the cross of Christ in the Orthodox Church, the icons don't say Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, over the top. It says the King of Glory, which is what it says in Greek over that cross right there. Because that's the reality of what happened on the cross, is that this was the King of Glory. He was not a condemned criminal who suffered justly. He was the King of Glory, and he triumphed in the cross, and the martyrs triumphed. Job didn't understand why he suffered the way that he did. As a matter of fact, if you read the book of Job, there's never really a point where God takes Job aside and says, let me explain to you what really happened here. We read the book, and we know what was going on because we get a window into what was happening in heaven. And we read about how the devil was saying, well, Job only trusts you because you bless him. And if you take all that away from me, he'll curse you to your face. God never said, well, let me fill you in. I'm sure in the afterlife, Job heard the rest of the story. But in this life, he didn't know. He didn't get a satisfactory answer like that. But he never lost his faith, his trust in God. When I was a kid, I remember very often, this is now illegal to do, all the kids would be riding in the bed of a truck, and we very often would have our head against the cab of the truck, and we would be looking backwards. And my father would be driving the truck, and I wasn't worried about where we were headed. I could see where we had been because I was looking backwards, but I wasn't watching what was forward because I had faith that he knew where he was going and where he was taking me. And in life, very often I've looked back and I've seen the same phenomenon, because there's a lot of times in the moment, I don't know why I'm going through what I'm going through. I don't know why I'm suffering this problem that seems to never go away, or when I'm ever to see the light at the end of the tunnel through whatever difficulty it is that I'm going through. But when I look back on my life, I'm able to see how God guided me, and I'm able to look back at those times when I didn't know at the time why this was happening, and I have some better appreciation for what it was that was going on, although I'm sure I still fully don't understand. That's the kind of faith that we need to have in God, because if we do that, if we put our faith in Him, if we say, God, whatever your will is, let it happen to me, we don't have any reason to fear that, oh my gosh, the floor is going to fall out from underneath us, and God's going to be laughing at us and saying, tricked you. That's not going to happen. If we put our faith in God, whatever it is that God has for us will be the best thing for us. And when we look at the state of the rich man in the parable and the state of Lazarus for all eternity, who would want to trade places with the rich man? And was the rich man even truly happy in this life? Sure, he lived a life where he was lacking for nothing material, but could someone really be happy that was living like that, who had who lacked the peace that only comes from a relationship with God, and lacked the love that one experiences when they love their fellow man? I don't think that he was ever really a happy man. But certainly he wasn't happy after his death, and Lazarus enjoyed eternal repose. That's the faith that we need to have. That's what we need to put our faith in. Psalm 36 sums up this whole question very well. I have seen the ungodly man highly exalted and lifting himself up like the cedars of Lebanon. But I passed by, and lo, he was not. And I sought him, and his place was not to be found. Keep innocence and behold uprightness, for there is a remnant for the peaceable man. The transgressors shall be utterly destroyed together, and the remnants of the ungodly shall be utterly destroyed. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord, and he is the defender in a time of affliction. And the Lord shall help them and shall deliver them, and he will rescue them from sinners and will save them because they hope in him. Amen.